Welcome to the 63rd edition of Make Pro Wrestling Majestic Again. I am Tiger Height.
And I am Peanut Gallery.
And we're going to, because the original plan was to cover a brand new promotion in the United Kingdom, but they canceled their show.
Yes, we were gonna cover that.
We were, but because they canceled the show at like the last second, we decided to talk about just in general promotions. And this will be a two-parter, so... This will be more of the historical aspect of promotions, and then we are going to be going into more of the cultural significance of promotions of professional wrestling throughout the years.
Yes.
So we got to talk about where it all came from. We have to talk about the general thing of where we have been.
What were the developments that led up to the creation of professional wrestling promotions that we know of today?
Yes. So, the tradition of combining wrestling and showmanship, so what we know now as professional wrestling, really started back in the 20s in Europe. A collection of wrestlers, I'm not going to go through their names, I mean, I think they're kind of important, but they kind of came together and they started to showcase themselves competing against each other through fixing of fights and stuff, and this was... And they traveled around Europe.
Right. And this was way, well, it really started back in the 1860s when they did these contests.
Yep.
They weren't necessarily fixed, but the origins of the showman style professional wrestling really came
to being then. So in 1848, the French showman Jean Expat was the first wrestling circus trope guy. So he was a showman who... was with a circus and wanted to have wrestling as a part of his show. So he decided to do that with the strongman competitions. And what he wanted to do is incorporate the audience into possibly beating individuals. Now, this ran from Denmark to Russia to a bunch of different places. And this is the modern Greco-Roman wrestling is what this was. So shoot, fight, basic... lots of intensity with that. And the first technical champion of professional wrestling was this guy, whose name was Paul Pons the Colossus. And he was actually very, very tall. Europe was established as a huge wrestling market very, very early, even before the trope came to America. Because I didn't think at that time... they had circuses that, or they were more so of like showcasing animals and stuff.
Right.
So this was the first instance of wrestling in a mainstream variety.
Right.
Because late 1800s to early 1900s, circuses were frickin' popular.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what happened there. Jack Karik, who maybe a lot of you may not know, he was the first technical American to book and promote as a wrestler, but he did it himself.
Yeah.
So he took what he learned in, I think he wrestled in France. He took what he learned there and he brought it to America. Now he really only wrestled in Michigan, Wisconsin, and just that whole Great Lake area.
Right, and that's kind of why wrestling is popular in Michigan, because that's where it really originated.
Yep, exactly. There has been wrestling, and this is, once again, around the 1800s.
Yeah.
So he came back in 1877, and he did this for, almost 10 years until 1885.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of where he started. He started wrestling when he was 16. He started booking in 1885 and then kept going until he died, I think, in the early 1900s. I can't remember the date. Now, with that being said, there are some places in the world that never really embraced a promotion, even so to this day. And I wanted to talk about Australia, because Australia really, really wanted the American, really relied on North American wrestlers to go over there to do tours. Even so, to this day, they do. But they actually did create a promotion, and this was still to this day the only major professional wrestling promotion in Australia. Now, you had like your World Wrestling All-Stars and Hulkamania It Begins Again shows, but this was World Championship Wrestling Australia.
Right. This is the Sydney version. This is not the Georgia version.
No, it is not the Georgia version. This opened up in the 1970s, mm-hmm. and once again, it was a structured organization, but they still relied on wrestlers in America. So they invited, like, Bruno Sammartino. They invited Carl Gotch. They invited Dominic DiNucci and kind of those wrestlers. Right. So popular in the 60s and 70s, but the promotion closed in 1978, and really nothing else picked up the way that the WCW Australia did.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just going to be jumping around at this point because establishing where we were is kind of important, but each place does it differently.
Right.
And in Japan, obviously, we have to talk about Ricky Dozen, who established the Japanese Wrestling Association back in the early 50s and continued to do that until he was killed in 1964 when the Yakuza found out that he was actually North Korean. There was never a good good blood there with the Yakuza, who are very, very pro-Japanese against the North Korean regime because of the treatment that they had back in, like, the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
So, never a really good thing there, and he was killed in a bar fight. We do not know exactly if it was a Yakuza member, but I think we sort of know it was a Yakuza member.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing was that it took until the 1950s to really establish a professional wrestling promotion because Japan really didn't need it. They had sumo, and still to this day is sumo is around, and I mean, sumo is ancient. It's an ancient, ancient sport, and it's very traditional, so Never really had that there. The promotion still existed after Ricky Dozen's death, albeit briefly, until two of his top students and the top draws in the JWA left to start their own promotions. Can you guess both of them? If you can guess one of them, I'll be happy.
Well, one of them is Inoki.
Yes, one of them is Antonio Inoki, who started New Japan back in the early
70s. Mm-hmm. I don't know the other one.
The other one was Giant Baba, who started All Japan Pro Wrestling, and still those companies are going to this day.
Right. They're two of the biggest ones.
Yep. To this day, I mean, the year after they left, the company folded, but that was, you know, after Ricky Dozen died.
Right.
So that's just kind of what happened with him. Now, in America, we have kind of a different situation because there's a bunch of different stuff.
Right.
I thought I'd...
So let's talk about the American promotions. And well, I want to get more into detail with that after we get back from our break. But in America, the first, I guess, official governing body, obviously the NWA, which was established in 1947.
Yep, because before that, and I don't mean to cut you off, but they went from the carnies to the wrestlers doing their own shows till sports promoters started to do theirs with Jess McMahon, Toots Mont, the Goldust Trio, but I'll let you continue with, like, the first, like, establishing governing body, because there were promotions. Like, the Goldust Trio had a promotion.
Right.
It was established. Ed Stringler, Lewis, Frank Gotch, and Toots Mont.
Right.
They had that. But the issue is that they really only did it in the Northeast.
Right.
Or the Northeast?
The Northeast and the Midwest.
Right, the Northeast, Midwest. So they were pretty much spoiled because, number one, they had Madison Square Garden, and really a lot of the country over here never got that until later.
Right. So let's talk about some of these promotions. When we come back from our break, we're going to talk a little bit about this.
Well, I wasn't quite done yet.
Oh, okay.
Because we can briefly talk about America since I did bring it up because it is important.
Let's talk about American promotions.
Yeah, so when our individual came back and other wrestlers popped up at that point, so you had Gorgeous George who promoted himself, but he was more California. So he was very much their big guy down in the California, in that side of it, especially Washington. Then you had Toots Mont and the Goldust Trio that really conquered that area. And then you had, like, Ric Flair, who was kind of here much, 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 much later.
Yeah.
Because the South really never took hold of wrestling until
until later. Right. I'm going to talk a little bit about that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, there is definitely something there on that, but we also need to talk about Mexico.
Yeah.
Because actually, Mexican, despite like the quarrels of how popular it is, Lucha Libre really didn't do anything until the 1920s.
Right.
So they had what, very similar to this, they had smaller promotions that were never really recorded, and they had different parts of Mexico and Central America until Salvador Lutin brought in the EMLL back in the 1920s. And while he was going there, a young El Santos popped up in 1942. It's important to describe El Santos because he really boomed Lucha Libre wrestling. Mm-hmm. Him with Gory Guerrero and Blue Demon, Mil Máscaras, like these are mm-hmm. not only wrestlers and popular wrestlers, but these were like folk heroes. Mm-hmm. It went into such a different level of popularity when it comes to Lucha Libre. And it's something that we can still appreciate today on that end. And, you know, with America, we're really going to go into it. But before we get into the NWA, it was pretty much the Wild West around here mm-hmm. until Tutmont and Tutmont and Jess started the Capital Wrestling Corporation.
Right.
And I think that was really the first big promotion in the United States.
Yeah, running it shows out of D.C.
Right, because the Goldust Trio were popular, but they were popular within a certain area.
Right.
But the lore of that, and also Jess was a boxing promoter.
Right.
And he really governed Madison Square Garden. If you were in Madison Square Garden back in the early 1900s, you made it. That was the place to be.
Right. And in the 50s, if you were trying to book something, you usually went through McMahon if it wasn't related to the sports teams.
I mean, Vince McMahon is a third. At least a third generation booker.
Yeah.
He's been in the game for, the McMahon family, it was a dynasty for almost, 100 plus years.
Yeah.
So, albeit very brief, that's kind of where that was because, especially in like Chicago area, you would have people like George Hackenschmidt and Carl Gotch. Right. But the thing was, is that they had managers and right. managers sort of kind of booked their own little wrestlers, and you wanted to get in line with a manager right. to really be there. But other than that, the managers worked with the wrestling venues and they just kind of did it that right. way. But at that time, it was still a shoot. And they had one established world champion. And Pina Gallery's definition of a promotion has championships.
Mm-hmm. Those champions, I think, were developed before promotions were finalized.
Well, like with our friend here, Pons, sashes were first developed as the correct. Crowning of the champion yeah. because that's what they used to establish tournament winners.
Yeah.
And then from there, it went into belts. I think I did a history of like the championship belt mm-hmm. eons and eons ago. Maybe I'll do another one just for a refresh. But that's kind of why he has a sash yeah. instead of a championship belt. But that's kind of where that went. So that's just kind of like a albeit brief history overview of professional right. wrestling promotions before the NWA. In parts and pieces, it's a little bit challenging to find a ton of in-depth information
yep,
on
is.
The hierarchy and structure, but I think each country kind of did it differently, and yep. it gelled really well together in those particular areas, from the mystique to the serious to traditional bounds,
right.
and then up until the experimentation of United States wrestling.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where I'm going to leave it. Pina Gallery, when we come back, what are we doing?
So we're going to talk about the formation of the NWA. We're going to talk about the initial promotions that were a part of it. And we're going to kind of ask ourselves, where are these promotions now? And then
right.
that will be a great segue into next week.
When we break down more of that cultural bound
yep.
that even I touched upon. Because a lot of that is very, very important
yeah.
with wrestling. So when we come back, we're going to do that.
All right.
All right. We are back. Pina Gallery. Go
All
ahead.
Right. So obviously, when it comes to wrestling, in the professional wrestling in the United States, the first thing that you should talk about, because this was the first time that a professional wrestling, you know, corporation of sorts determines that they needed to establish some sort of regulations regarding like who the world champion is and governing, you know, these promotions around the country, and especially for local TV deals, which was popular at the time, you had to kind of establish this territory system.
I mean, that was pretty much what you had was local syndication for sports.
Right, and it's really the same process that even today, like certain teams and stuff have like territories, like, you know, the NFL has territories where their teams are allowed to have syndicated television and radio and all that stuff. So this was kind of the wrestling equivalent of establishing this. Not only did it help establish the syndication portion, but again, talking about the world title and establishing a world's heavyweight champion, that's kind of where this came from.
Right.
We're going to touch briefly into other NWA properties. Like there were Japanese promotions, there was an Australian promotion, a New Zealand promotion, there were some in England as well, but we're really going to be focusing on the United States.
Right.
So we're just going to go through and ask ourselves what these promotions had evolved into. And of course, we can't talk about this organization without talking about, in my opinion, kind of the big two. And we're going to talk about the first one, which is Jim Crockett Promotions.
And this was a Southern promotion.
It was.
This
was based out of Charlotte, North Carolina.
Before we really break this down, the one thing that I did not establish was that the Goldust Trio were not a part of the NWA at any point in time. This was very early, 1900s.
Right. This was before the NWA even existed.
But they traveled the country establishing not only themselves, but they established the first indication of tag team wrestling and also long-term booking and feuds. So they really added that flash, and they incorporated that to going to these different territories, and that's the antithesis of these people capitalizing on the popularity of professional wrestling.
Right. But let's talk about, because Jim Crockett is a very a huge figure in the world of professional wrestling.
I mean, that whole family is still huge. It's like the Jarrett family. They're very underrated.
Yeah, and we are going to talk about their continuation later on.
Who owns the stuff for Jim Crockett Promotions?
Well, we're going to talk about
that.
So, Jim Crockett Promotions, it was bought by Ted Turner in 1989. It was rebranded as World Championship Wrestling. That is kind of whoever owns WCW owns Jim Crockett Promotions.
But that's not necessarily true, because Flair's last match is governed under the Jim Crockett Promotion banner. So WWE doesn't own Jim Crockett Promotions?
They own parts of it. They own parts and bits and pieces of it. They own it up to a certain point in time, and then they no longer own Jim Crockett Promotions. Jim Crockett Promotions still exists as a wrestling company, though it really kind of fell out of favor when Ted Turner bought it and turned it into WCW.
Right.
So that's kind of what it is.
I mean, I think a lot of people need to understand that Southern wrestling is very different, and Jim Crockett Promotion was very traditional to the Southern antiquities of that, because especially when you get down to the nitty-gritty promotions like a Jim Crockett, it becomes very culturally entwined.
Yes. So it became WCW.
It became WCW.
And then obviously we know the history. If you're a wrestling fan, you have an idea of what the history of WCW is.
Right.
The other major promotion that we can't not talk about is WWF.
They are the gold standard for promotions, period, end of story.
They had Madison Square Garden. Need we say more about it? You know, it's one of those things.
It started with Capitol Wrestling. Yeah. And even though, because the weird thing is that Vince McMahon Sr. was not a part of the NWA, but he kept close ties with the NWA.
Yeah, the WWF was part of the NWA for...
Capitol Wrestling was a part of the NWA.
No, so it was the WWF.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
The WWF, you mean?
No. Even the Federation was a part of the NWA.
I thought there was a point in time when they were not a part of
it. Yeah, there was, but they're one of the original they're one of the original foundation pieces of the...
Right, well, you can't have it because Madison Square Garden, you're in New York. Yeah. That's that area's stuff.
That's the center of population for the longest time. So, obviously the company still exists.
a multi-billion dollar company.
But those are the two, when it comes to professional wrestling in the territories, you have
WCW,
to talk about WCW, Jim Crockett, and you have to talk about WWF.
WCW was never a part of the NWA, correct?
It was not. It was always Jim Crockett promotions.
I kind of assume that.
So let's talk about some other promotions because we'll talk about it probably next week when we talk a little bit more about the nationalization of the WWF and WCW.
Yep.
But let's talk about ASW first because...
ASW?
So ASW was a promotion based out of Vancouver, Canada, and it folded in 1989, and most of these are going to be due to budgetary issues.
Right.
The interesting thing, though, about ASW is that this was the first foray of a young Mar Rinaldo.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that's where he first got a start, was in was in All-Star Wrestling.
Interesting.
Yep, out of Vancouver.
That's probably why he did stuff with WWE, because he already knows and was very passionate about wrestling.
Now, for the next one, I don't really have a picture of it, but let's talk about 50th State Big Time Wrestling was based out of Honolulu, Hawaii.
And it was actually folded in 1979 and then
sold to a New Zealand promoter who... ran the biggest wrestling promotion in New Zealand at the time.
So I have it down here as New Zealand Vince because that's
pretty much what it is.
So, just a Hawaiian-based promotion, and I think he also owned properties in like Samoa and stuff like that as well. So the big guy down there was a Hawaiian NWA promotion.
Okay, let's talk about Georgia Championship Wrestling.
Another established name in professional wrestling in America.
It's still around.
Really?
It's still around. Georgia Championship Wrestling is still doing shows, but obviously you know about Georgia Championship Wrestling because of the infamous, and I have a picture for this one too, Black Saturday incident.
Yep.
Can't not talk about Georgia Championship
Wrestling without talking about that.
I mean, the whole Black Saturday incident was really the, almost the nail in the coffin for Ted Turner to get into wrestling because this was on one of his channels. I think it was on TBS at the time.
Yeah.
And Turner and McMahon did not like each other.
Right.
At that point already.
Right.
So he did not want Georgia Championship Wrestling to be owned by McMahon, so
he
funded him to get out.
Right. But Georgia Championship Wrestling was not the precursor to WCW. It was actually Jim Crockett Promotions.
Yes.
Let's talk about...
World Wrestling Council.
Well, yeah, but before we're going to talk about that, because obviously World Wrestling Council is also another promotion that is still in operation, but it was one of the founding members of the NWA.
Is this the one in Puerto Rico?
Yeah, this is the one in San
Colognes. This is the Colognes, okay.
Yeah.
And you can't talk about the World Wrestling Council and the Colognes without talking about Bruiser Brody.
Right. Yes, the Bruiser Brody there as well. Okay. But let's talk about
NWA Heart of America, which was a Kansas City-based promotion. The notable thing about this is that Jim Crockett Jr. Went in 1988, so after Jim Crockett Promotions was sold to Ted Turner, and actually attempted to capitalize on cable and make a third major brand. And we're going to see this pop up here and there. Obviously, it didn't succeed, and they failed a year later.
Right.
But as we move forward, you will see some people attempting to create a, quote, third major brand to compete on a national scale with the WWE and the WCW.
Right.
So that's the interesting thing about that. Obviously, Heart of America no longer exists as a company, folded in 1989. All right, let's talk about Big Time Wrestling, which I had a picture for. This was the one based out of Detroit. And there are a lot of brands that are called Big Time Wrestling, as you will see. But... this promotion folded in 1980 due to financial issues.
Right.
Interestingly enough, the tape library is not owned by the WWE.
Huh.
It's actually independently owned, and they actually have a channel where you can watch old footage of it.
Oh, they actually have like a YouTube channel where they redistribute the matches.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
So another one I want to talk about, I don't think I had a picture for this one, was Atlantic Grand Prix Wrestling, which was based out of Halifax, Nova Scotia. A lot of big time wrestlers got their start in that, like Roddy Piper, for example.
Yep.
Got his start in that promotion.
Yeah, because Roddy Piper is Canadian.
Yeah.
Well, he was Canadian.
Yeah, and this was also part of the inspiration behind New Japan's Pro Wrestling's initiative to create a international Grand Prix, if you will, of wrestling. When they...
The NWA or
no,
this NJ, promotion specifically?
No, NJPW, this was the inspiration to call it a Grand Prix. Because there are a lot of things called Grand Prix, especially in French Canada. But that is kind of where the Grand Prix part of IWGP comes from.
A very interesting place of influence for Japan.
Yeah.
Like this random little promotion in Nova Scotia.
Yeah, well, it was very popular, too. Again, a lot of big names came from that. So,
right.
But let's talk about the next one, which is another interesting one. Championship Wrestling from Florida.
You can't go wrong with Championship Wrestling from Florida. This is a Dusty Rhodes country.
It is. Obviously, it folded in...
Well, didn't Championship Wrestling from Florida become FSW or FCW?
No, it did not.
Okay.
There are actually two different entities, but Championship Wrestling from Florida merged with Jim Crockett Promotions in 1987. And you'll see this too. Jim Crockett Promotions, they owned a lot of these Southern, especially Southern-based wrestling
companies. Well, yeah, because
they
started to do that to try to keep Vince McMahon
out of the South.
Yep. They wanted to have that established hierarchy because the NWA wasn't going to do anything about it.
So Mike Graham, the son of the founder, wanted to restart the promotion, but Championship Wrestling from Florida was taken, so he had to start a new named promotion, and that is where we get Florida Championship Wrestling from.
Oh.
Florida Championship Wrestling.
So they're intertwined, but just not directly.
Yes, they're not directly intertwined, but father and son, father founded Championship Wrestling from Florida, son founded FCW.
Gotcha.
Obviously, FCW was bought out by WWE, and then they turned into NXT. So that's where you get that from. Let's talk about Hollywood Wrestling, which I don't have a picture for, but I want to talk about this because Hollywood Wrestling was actually the first promotion to have syndicated television.
Yep.
And that was that Hollywood Wrestling based out of Los Angeles.
Because that was, not that promotion specifically, but Gorgeous George, that was kind of his area. So wrestling was very popular back then, and they wanted to get that on syndication.
Right.
Right.
But it's the same company that folded in 1982 because of the rise of
WWE.
National television, essentially.
Right.
All right. Let's talk about Maple Leaf Wrestling. Which is another, this one is Toronto-based, actually. It was.
Well, I said duh because it's obvious.
It aligned with the WWF in 1985, which you'll see alignment also being very common with the smaller promotions. As the smaller promotions lose relevance, they will align themselves with a particular larger promotion to prop up shows.
Right.
WWF decided to discontinue it after the founder died in 1995, so it no longer exists, and it's kind of with in the graveyard with the WWE graveyard.
With all the other properties WWE owns.
Right.
That they don't use.
Right. I want to talk about, before we get into this one, Big Time Wrestling in San Francisco.
I do know about Big Time Wrestling, yep.
It folded in 1981 due to financial issues, and actually that is why the Cow Palace is very popular with wrestling.
Yeah, because that was Big Time Wrestling's, like, forte. That was, I think they called that the Madison Square Garden of California.
Right. And before I get to this picture, too, another one that I didn't have a picture for, the Funks had... Western State Sports, which was based out of Amarillo, Texas.
Yep.
It was sold by the Funks in 1980, and it
became discontinued in 1981.
Yeah, I'm assuming they sold it to the McMahons.
No, they did not.
Oh,
no, they sold it to another person who wanted to keep it going, but
financial issues.
Yeah.
So Amarillo actually used to be a huge wrestling town.
Oh, yeah. No, huge. Mm-hmm. Well, because the Funks were enormous.
I mean,
Terry and Dory Funk Jr., they're second-generation wrestlers.
So now we can get to the NWF.
The NWF was based out of Buffalo, New York,
and it was also based out of Pittsburgh or Cleveland, one of those two for a while.
The NWF, an interesting thing about this, it closed in 1994,
but the champions from the original were also used by New Japan Pro Wrestling for a short time. That's why New Japan has NWF-branded titles as part of their history.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from.
Cool.
All right, Houston Wrestling.
Before we get to Stampede, of course, we'll talk about Stampede, but I want to talk about Houston Wrestling as well.
Houston Wrestling was aligned with the WWF in the cable television wars.
So, you know, again, we're getting this alignment. Smaller companies want to align themselves with larger companies.
And it was a foregone conclusion anyway, so they're like, might as well, if you can't beat them, join them.
Right.
Sort of
and they closed down in 1987.
A lot of them are going to be closing in the 80s because for obvious reasons.
So, but let's talk about Stampede now. Stampede Wrestling is...
I don't think we really need to go too much into this.
It had three iterations. The first iteration was bought by Vince McMahon in 1982 to Vince McMahon, who then sold it back to the Harts. Who then sold it back to him. So there were a lot of ownership changes between the McMahons and the Harts.
Right. This is why the Harts and the McMahons have such a close working relationship that they do, even still, despite of what happened.
Right. So obviously, Calgary-based company.
How many frickin' wrestlers have come out of Stampede? I mean,
right.
Bret Hart, Owen Hart, Chris Benoit. I mean, almost all of them went through Stampede.
And obviously, you can't talk about Stampede without talking about the famous wrestling school that was attached to it called the Hart Family Dungeon.
Yep. in the basement of the Hart House.
Yep. All right. Well, let's talk about NWA Mid-America, which was folded in 1981 and taken over by Jerry Lawler and Jerry Jarrett.
And they backed a company called the
Memphis.
What?
Memphis?
No. This was a new company. This was Continental Wrestling Association.
Oh.
Another attempt to create a third major brand.
Well, yeah, because of Jerry Lawler.
Yep, Jerry Lawler and the Jarretts. So that's where you get that one.
Continental Wrestling Association, which we'll talk about a little bit later on, it folded in the later 80s, but they bought this in 1981 to attempt to create a third major broker in wrestling.
Right. A lot of it is in the South, but it's like as soon as WCW took over.
Yep.
You see, if a brand maybe within California wanted to be that third brand, I think that would have worked.
Yeah. But a lot of them were in the South. The South is very popular.
All right. This one here is Pacific Northwest Wrestling.
Again, this one fell to the wars of cable, the cable wars.
They had a missed opportunity of having a Bigfoot as their mascot.
So Portland Wrestling folded in, or Pacific Northwest Wrestling, which was also Portland Wrestling,
folded in 1992.
Another one that's famous, I didn't have a picture for, World Class Championship Wrestling.
Oh, yeah.
The Dallas one, the Sportatorium. Yep.
That one folded in 1991 because of financial issues.
Yep.
So a lot of these companies, they just folded because there's no money to be made. It's not in
cable. because people only wanted one. There was only one thing in town. There was a takeover.
Right.
What can you do?
Right.
So that was one. We can't talk about wrestling without talking about the original AWA. That one was actually more of like a hostile takeover by WCW in a way.
Yep.
Because all their major stars, even their main promoter left for WCW.
That place folded in 1991.
They weren't bought by WCW, but WCW just kind of said, oh, we're just going to poach all your wrestlers.
Right. I mean, the AWA, it was the cornerstone of central United States of wrestling.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of their big shows were actually in Denver.
Yeah.
But
Denver, Minneapolis, Chicago. So that's why Chicago is a big wrestling town, is because of the AWA.
St. Louis
influence.
And all of that. Yeah. I mean, you had Kurt Hennig come out of this. I think this was Vern Gagne. So, you know, Kurt Hennig, Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage. I mean, they poached a lot of their big-time guys.
All right.
And then we also want to talk about the St. Louis Wrestling Club, which was a St. Louis-based promotion that folded in 1985.
Yeah.
But, again, very small, didn't really align with anybody.
Well, because they were trying to compete with the AWA.
Yeah. So that's kind of where that went.
I mean, even within there, there's a high, even right. within the NWA, there's a hierarchy of promotions.
Yeah.
It's like the St. Louis Wrestling Club is going to be second nature to the AWA.
Right.
Because it's the fucking AWA.
Right. And then another one I want to talk about too is the Universal Wrestling Federation.
This is
not the Herb Abrams one. This was a different one. That was based out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and it was bought by Jim Crockett Promotions in 1987.
But the problem now, the reason that Herb Abrams could do this
is because they didn't have the trademark.
No, because the person forgot to get the trademark.
Forgot to file the trademark.
Right.
But it was called a bunch of other ones as well, like NWA Tri-State and stuff like that.
Another one I do want to talk about, of course, we wanted to get back to the Continental Championship Wrestling, which again was a failed attempt at a third major promotion in
right.
the United States. So really, when it comes to the rise of WWE and Jim Crockett Promotions, because that's really what we're talking about here, that's going to lead into our next week.
Yeah, now, just out of curiosity, were there any international promotions that were a part of the NWA?
Yeah, so again, I'm talking about, especially in Japan, a lot of Japanese promotions, New Japan and All Japan, were both a part of the NWA.
Oh, I didn't know that.
There was one or two in England. There were a few in Mexico as well. I think the precursor to CMLL was also a member of the NWA. So there were a lot of these promotions. Like I said, it really came down to two reasons as to why they did this. To establish a world's heavyweight champion, to internationalize it, you know, and make sure that everything just kind of flows, but also to because of cable television. It
right.
was just popular at the time. With the rise of WWF and Jim Crockett Promotions renamed WCW to National Prominence, a lot of these companies decided they couldn't do it anymore. So that's why there were various attempts to either merge with one of the bigger companies or try to form a third coalition.
You said of like, where are they now? What about the NWA? What did it go through to what we know it of today?
Right, and we're going to talk about that in the next episode of this. But I wanted to kind of give an overview of what professional wrestling turned into from the 50s up until their national
expansions. And then the history of promotions from the 1800s to
right.
To the NWA, because right. that was the first leveled hierarchy of promotions in general,
right.
which I don't think has been attempted again of a hierarchy within promotions.
No, there were attempts. Like I said, Crockett, after he went to Kansas City, he wanted to establish a third major promotion.
I'm talking about like a NWA-esque thing where they're not a promotion necessarily, but they're a
governing body.
A governing body. I don't think that's been done again.
Have been attempts. I know that Inoki attempted to do it with the International Wrestling Grand Prix.
Yep, he did try to do that.
That was after he had left the NWA. There were attempts by other promoters to do to keep that model, but with the nationalization of WWF and WCW, that kind of went by the wayside.
Right.
So we're going to talk about, in our next episode, of course, about what happened since then. So we're going to talk about the reorganization of the NWA in the 90s. We're going to talk about the fall of WCW in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to talk about what's happening right now, the rise and fall of these promotions.
Right.
And where their power is and who has it and all that kind of stuff. Because the NWA did continue to exist as a governing body until 2017.
Right. The NWA never necessarily died. That's the thing. Like, the NWA has been around in one some form or another since its inception in 1942. Mm-hmm. And, you know, looking at it now, I think we'll have a new life with it. But we'll talk about that in the next episode. But if you did enjoy this, remember to like, follow, subscribe, become a patron. I'm about to restructure that, but this weekend went so fast I can't see straight. And as always, be
majestic.